What are we doing?
We're recording a podcast, Cookie. Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I am Cookie.
And I'm Scott. And today is February 18th, 2018, episode 56 of our Fancy Ramen podcast. A podcast sometimes about gaming. And other times, it's filled with off-topic banter about such topics as what movies we saw this weekend and other media. And the reason I transitioned us straight into movies is because Cookie and I just got done sharing that we both went and saw Black Panther yesterday.
I was going to do a bit, but then I lost it like all at once.
Your chance
we can give you a second chance. We're not live.
This is Fancy Ramen, take two.
Click.
Actually, are you recording?
This is Fancy Ramen, take three.
I didn't even check to see if you were recording, Scott.
Oh, you're asking me? I'm always recording.
Okay, that's great.
Do not rely on me always recording. It just happens to be that I was on the ball this time.
And for those who weren't paying attention, me and Scott both saw a movie today. Yesterday, about the Black rights, civil rights movements.
That's right.
I hear what? Malcolm X has they've taken some liberties with Malcolm X, and he has superpowers in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he kills a lot more people.
Yeah. Are we assuming that Malcolm X
was played by Michael B. Jordan?
I was gonna say alliance with Eric Killmonger.
Yeah.
They both have glasses.
Is that the protagonist or the villain?
He's the villain.
His name is Killmonger.
Killmonger, the good guy.
No. So there was a part of me that did not know whether you were talking about the actor's name or a character's name. And I'm like, Killmonger is kind of a, how do I put it? Unfortunate name to be given or to have as a family name.
Oh, I will say, actually, on the realm of keeping on the ball with the recording, we've got audio for days, and I just added video right now, so.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I can use the no vision or no image
found.
Yeah, is that from, am I thinking, wait, like sound only, is that from Metal Gear Solid?
Yes.
Oh, where you're talking about where it's like the visualized waveform, or?
Yeah.
Like specifically
the no image from the like codec in I think that happens in Metal Gear Solid.
You know Deep Throat, right?
Yeah, I know how to do that.
No, the character in Metal Gear Solid 1 who is represented by just a voice until you actually learn their secret or their real identity. And they go by Deep Throat. And that is a play off of the Watergate scandal.
Right. I knew that it was from Watergate, but I actually don't remember it being in Metal Gear Solid. But it's been a long time since I played it. So
is it fair for me to say who Deep Throat is? Spoilers.
I'm going to guess, spoiler, that it's Meryl.
No.
No. Okay.
I'm sorry. My mind went in like a bad direction there.
Big Boss?
It's Gray Fox or the ninja or ninja.
Oh,
I don't remember if they use.
Yeah, Gray Fox is the ninja cyborg. Yeah.
Do they refer to Gray Fox as ninja or the ninja?
I don't think so. Cyborg ninja? I think it's cyborg ninja.
I don't remember. And then when they're like, well, that was a cool novel concept. Let's bring ninja back. Oh, wait, he's dead. I guess we have to use this one.
Let's turn him into Olga.
Yeah, exactly.
Another spoiler alert after the fact. I'm sorry, all these posthumous spoilers don't really help anybody.
Is Metal Gear Solid like 1, 2, and 4? Are those actually good stories? I can't really tell anymore.
I would say 4 is probably not a good story, but it is almost entirely a story.
Because I think
it's really not a game. There's not that much gameplay compared to like cutscene time. I don't know. I liked the story for 2 just because it was wild and completely unpredictable.
Yeah, the whole Solid Snake simulator bit was pretty interesting. Hey, what about Black Panther?
It's okay. I hate superhero movies. Everybody who's listened to our podcast before knows that. Anybody who's listening now just got that confirmation again. I actually really like this movie a lot.
What was the last superhero movie you saw, just out of curiosity?
Thor Ragnarok, which was also not bad, but...
And the one before that?
I could have passed on seeing that one. And the one before that was probably Civil War.
Yeah, you could have passed on that one.
And I could have passed on that. Yeah, I actually could have passed on pretty much everything. And I even could have passed on, say, Black Panther as a superhero movie.
As a civil rights movie, it was pretty good, though.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so do you want to get into the fact that, like, the, I guess its current relevance to our own, like, political zeitgeist that's going on in the United States? Like, I noticed a lot of stuff about Wakanda as this fictional potential superpower trying to wrestle with a couple of different visions as either a isolationist hidden superpower or a potential
world conquering superpower.
Yeah, like a revolutionary interventionist superpower, or acting as a technological and like foreign aid superpower. Like, There are two struggles going on. There's the binary between Wakanda remaining hidden and Wakanda becoming public to the world, and then the arguments of Wakanda becoming public to the world and usurping the traditional power roles that each country has through Killmonger's rule, which he essentially what he wants is just revolution for oppressed peoples. And then the alternative was... I have a list of the actors up so I can remember everybody. I think it's Nakia. Nakia, played by Lupita Nyong'o, who her vision, I think, is ultimately what Wakanda will become based upon the results of this film, which if anybody thinks that a superhero film was going to end with the villain being in control, I'm sorry for giving that spoiler to you. But her vision is Wakanda being a beacon of, you know, like, hope and support for the free world.
Did he just spoil the movie for me? No, don't worry.
Neil, if you go to a superhero movie and you expect your superhero to lose, you have not been to many superhero movies. Or you have, I don't know.
Been to the right kind of superhero movies?
How many superhero movies have I seen where the hero loses in the end?
Guyver.
I can't.
Really?
Guyver?
Guyver with Mark Hamill.
Guyver.
The classic based on the hit anime series and manga series. Well, Guyver!
I don't think I ever saw. No, yeah. Does he.
With breast boobs, breast beams? Yeah.
That was a really dark show.
I did not know. I know nothing about this.
Guyver, the dark hero. I suggest you check it out.
I guess I'll have to.
It's kind of sad and not for children, because you definitely expect all of your, like you just said, all of your superheroes are going to win. Half the time, Guyver dies.
Oh, okay. All right. Wait, spoilers. Is this like, so Guyver apparently has the ability to come back from being dead, it sounds like.
Maybe.
No.
It depends on what version of Guyver you're watching or reading.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Okay.
Can I just say one thing?
Absolutely.
So I guess this is going to be small spoiler, but...
I mean,
Marvel needs to stop killing its villains.
I know, right? Actually, I'm assuming you're saying that because Killmonger was actually a really good villain. Mm-hmm. And a good character as well.
I want to know what Killmonger's 100% dad
agreed.
Did.
What Killmonger's dad did?
Did like well,
we, you should watch the movie.
Did, yeah, we oh, spoil is that the actually movie something? If we talk about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was just gonna make the joke that like if Dave Killmonger was like a decent person but always looked down upon because of his last name, like it was hard for him to get honest work because his last name is Killmonger. So his son gets this horrible impression of like society, and hence becomes, you know, like a bit of a
Killmonger.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, there's a lot to Killmonger having that particular name. But I also think, like, I don't know if you agree with this, Cookie, especially with Black Panther being heralded as a film that's like, this is tailor-made for a black audience to really enjoy. I think they do a really good job of actually fleshing out Killmonger as not being like an intrinsically evil person by any sense, but more shaped by his unfortunate circumstance. And I feel like that earns a lot of sympathy with the audience in general. Like, he's not a bad person. He doesn't have incredibly evil goals. He had, like most good villains and good writing for villains, he is just jaded or cynical in a sense that makes his approach not the ideal approach that a superhero would take. And so he is a villain in comparison to our protagonist, but he's not, I don't think many audiences will pick him up to be a completely evil person. And I don't think he deserves that as a character either.
Because he's a well-written character and very fleshed out.
Absolutely. He's a really good villain. And so killing him off would be a mistake.
To your point about Marvel maybe not, like, maybe they shouldn't have killed Killmonger off. I just kind of think it might be that certain media companies or movie companies, whatever, are worried about going down that rabbit hole of, you know, we never kill off villains. And it's always like they have the ability to go back and recycle villains, which I think has been seen as kind of cheesy or cliche in the genre.
But it's Marvel.
Yeah, they're already recycling superheroes over and over.
Like, yeah, no,
they've already committed the cardinal sin.
I don't disagree with you, but I think that's probably, like, they wanted to make this movie edgier, fresher, and so forth than, not edgier, that's probably not the right term, but fresher than like every other Marvel movie in their catalog so far, right?
It is fresher, absolutely.
And
about on par.
So why do you think it's on par? Is there something that this movie is lacking to you? Or but you've also, Cookie, you've felt that the Marvel movies in general have been pretty solid, right?
Yeah, they've just been getting better and better
since
Age of Ultron, maybe? Like, they've just kind of been ramping up and continuing to polish what they've been doing and making a superhero movie actually good. Less of a, hey, Liz, you want to go see this superhero movie? And she'd be like, eh. So now she's like, you know, that actually wasn't terrible. I won't question you for the next one. Unless, I'd never suggest you go see a DC movie.
There wasn't enough whitewashing in this movie for me to be interested in it, though.
Like, I was kind of curious as to how they were going to play off a movie with two white actors.
That's it? Just two white actors?
I mean,
besides background
people. Primary, yeah, white actors. And even then, their roles are not that substantial either. I think there's pretty much a nod to a previous character that, what's the name of our...
White Wolf?
Oh, Martin Freeman. I'm thinking of Martin Freeman. I was trying to not say Bilbo Baggins.
Or you could just say Bilbo Baggins. That's fine.
Yeah, or Bilbo Baggins. And then Andy Serkis as Claw. Like, one of them is a, I guess, a minor antagonist, and one of them is a minor
protagonist
mix. Either way, their roles aren't that substantial. They perform a task of moving the story narrative along. Or just making nods that there is a Marvel universe outside of Wakanda and Black Panther's current conflicts and struggles. But they're pretty much like they're absolutely interchangeable, and they could be glossed over and the movie would still be like, there could be many ways to remove them from the film and still have it be, I think, a very solid product.
Fair enough. You did, Neil, you asked what I found lacking in Black Panther soundtrack. I honestly expected a little more. I'm not 100% sure what I expected a little more of, but I expected a better soundtrack, especially when I found out that Kendrick Lamar was doing most of it.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I also found, I don't know if he does this with his albums, but on the credits, it wasn't Kendrick Lamar, but they were crediting Kendrick Duckworth, K. Duckworth.
Is that his real name?
Yeah, yeah. His last name's Duckworth. If you you should really listen to Damn if you haven't already. He's actually got, he talks about his family, and kind of how he came to be on his last track, Duckworth.
So is that album like thematic about the building of devices that hold back rivers?
What?
Can you see
because it's called Damn.
Like, where is he going with this?
Oh man, you had me completely stuck. I wasn't following you.
But I guess
no, it doesn't.
I would say yeah, it kind of does.
A symbolic
okay,
river.
Okay, Cookie. You have to,
well,
yeah,
the
you have
symbolic
to find
river
a way to
of
fit
Kendrick
river
Lamar's life, you know, the story of like how a dude killed his, was it his uncle or his father or his brother?
Should have listened to the album right before this. Yeah, someone important to it.
Yeah,
his family.
How someone, so first song is about someone getting important being killed by someone in his family. Excuse me. First song's about someone being killed in his family that's important to him. Last song's about him being signed to a record label, finding out the owner of that record label is the person that killed important person to him.
From first song.
Yeah.
So you listen to the album first forwards, then backwards, because then it tells the story in reverse.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Is this real?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, like that sucks. Oh, well, I mean, yes, that way to state the obvious. I really liked how you felt the need to answer that. No, this was not about a dam, like the structural dam. Yeah, rap culture and rap history is way more interesting than rock history. I'm just going to say that right from the
get-go. No, absolutely.
100%.
Unless you're Drake, and then it's like, oh, you played on the that Canadian after-school special. Yeah, Degrassi. And then you became an artist.
Running through the six with his woes. But yeah, that was the thing I found lacking of Black Panther was the soundtrack was not nearly as wonderful as I was hoping it was going to be. And something else. I'll have to see it a second time.
Okay, I'd have to agree with Cookie there. I was excited hearing that Kendrick was playing a major part in the soundtrack. Though I will say that this whole amalgamation of like African art and music in comparison, or not in comparison, but in combination with like all the vibrant and diverse sets that they have, whether in their like Wakanda proper or the African jungle or the mountains or Busan, South Korea. Like, they've got a really good, cohesive kind of product when they're presenting these. When you're in Wakanda, there's these cool tracks with, like, very percussion-heavy, like, African drums that are really cool. Like, they set the scene incredibly well. There just wasn't, like, any really bumping tracks during any of the, like, fight scenes or other times where filling in with, like, a good more modern music track would have really strengthened a scene or at least been a really pleasing addition. Oh, there was one more thing, Cookie, that I wanted to ask you about is, actually two things. First off, the cinematography was cool. I don't really care much for fight scenes, but hey.
You talking about the pseudo one-shot fight scene in the gambling arena?
Oh, that was really cool. My biggest thing that I took away from the cinematography on these, and because I haven't seen a lot of other superhero movies, there were a couple action shots where they keep Black Panther or T'Challa like centered in the shot. And so it's following his movement, and he's got very like fluid movement throughout the scenes with his like choreography and combat. And I just thought like keeping him focused on the center and having the camera do a lot of like, I guess, rotating around him as a central point was really, really cool. Like, I thought that was a really cool way to shoot the action shots, because it seems like there's a lot more action shots in other movies where it's cutting to like the hero coming in and out of the frame of a scene, doing action and then moving through it. And because this was so like centrally focused on him, mm-hmm. it was especially nice to look at. And it's a really, it's a beautiful movie. And then the other thing is that I don't know if you guys ever watch movies and like try to apply the Bechdel test to them, or if you're aware of what that is.
The Nancy and what's her face test, more than one female character, do they interact with each other? Do they interact with each other about not a boy?
Yeah, like two named women characters. This is the way that I've heard it most frequently interpreted, is two named female characters are talking about something that's not related to a male character in the movie. And a lot of movies in Hollywood actually don't pass the Bechdel test. And this one, because it has such a like loaded female cast, actually passes the Bechdel test quite frequently, which is, it's really surprising, and it was cool. There was some really wonderful female characters in this. And I thought, not only for having a primarily like black cast, they also had a very female heavy cast. And so it was especially diverse for what we see in a lot of blockbuster Hollywood movies.
Well, they were trying to represent part of Africa that generally tends to be a matriarchal society.
Absolutely.
Rather than patriarchal.
Do you think it does a better job than Wonder Woman?
Of
empowering
showing women?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. The women play, like, Wonder Woman is the central protagonist in Wonder Woman, right? And she has... How many female allies does she really have in her film? She has one or two that are playing like ancillary roles. And in this, Prince T'Challa, Black Panther, is leaning very heavily on the expertise of his sister, his general, his ex-love interest. Yeah. Like his primary allies are almost all exclusively women. And they have interactions with him from places of like equivalent power and influence. Well, not when he's king, but very, very similar to that. And then they actually have quite a bit of interaction with each other, in which there's really no one else making like big decisions that they are. And so I think that the women in this film are portrayed in definitely a very empowering way, and they make great characters just as well as their male counterparts.
And I was going to say, when you asked if they portray women equally as strong in Wonder Woman, not in Wonder Woman the movie, but definitely in Batman vs. Superman. No, the other one. Justice League.
I was going to say.
Justice League.
You
there's
mean?
There's a lot more Amazonian walkabouts.
Oh, really?
And Justice League itself.
Okay, so in Justice League, does Superman have a conversation with Wonder Woman directly and not through Bruce Wayne?
Maybe? I don't know. It's so long ago, and it's DC.
That's already damning, okay?
Maybe.
The two characters that are supposed to have like the best friendship in the Justice League do not fucking talk to each other. In the movie that introduces them together.
Are they supposed to have the best relationship in the Justice League?
I'm talking like friendship, you know? Like, yeah, Superman and Wonder Woman are supposed to be like best buddies.
No.
Okay,
Wonder Woman's just trying to get on that D.
Okay, I thought at first you were like actually serious about this argument, but I was just going to say, like, of the five or six whatever main members of the Justice League, like, Batman and Superman obviously are at odds to some extent. I mean, that's how we got Kingdom Come.
To some extent.
To some extent.
they're like the rivals that acknowledge that if they didn't have other rivals, they'd be taking each other down.
Yeah, it's like, thank God we have supervillains to deal with.
Exactly.
Otherwise Superman, you'd be... Otherwise, Clark, you'd be out for the count.
Although this particular version in the DC movie universe, it seems like they bond really well over their mothers.
Martha!
Yeah.
Why'd you say that name? Martha.
Speaking of movies, did you guys hear that director Chris Columbus has been tied to Five Nights at Freddy's?
Speaking of movies.
Hey, Columbus is a Hollywood veteran. He has directed classics like Home Alone, Mrs. Doubtfire, and the first two Harry Potter movies.
I do like all of those films.
Yeah.
I do like the first two Harry Potter movies.
So let me present this. What? Putting the movies, the bad movies and good movies aside, what have you guys been playing this week for games?
I am going to let Scott answer first.
Oh, you got me. Okay. Yeah, you did. You fooled me completely. I've been playing a game that I've already told you about called Darkest Dungeon. And the only update I have for that is that this game has some elements to it in which once you actually get like enough experience under your belt, you start being able to initiate like missions or tasks that you can't back out of. Like there's no retreating. And at this point, it's right around the time that you actually have some good units that you appreciate. And it's some pretty stressful gameplay. I'll say that there's a boss called the Shrieker that when you go to fight this thing, it is it gives you a warning that you won't be able to, you won't be able to forfeit or retreat from the quest. And so I thought, well, in that case, I'll have to put out my absolute best party members and really crush this. And then...
the mistake you've made.
I know. And then I got like two turns into the fight and I'm like, everyone is going to die a horrible death and I'm going to be horribly crippled in my ability to play this game.
At which point you have to then start from scratch. Not the game. Not like start the game over,
but you have to start
raising some
scratch.
New recruits, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the recruits that I got were after a very long process of culling the weak and like getting just the right troops. I made it out just barely, but I am now terrified. This game has actively instilled fear in me to partake in any quest in which I can't back out of. Because we're talking like three of the four available units were on death's door, and I just happened to complete it before anyone could die of a heart attack or get last hit. So, Darkest Dungeon is a game that understands how to convey fear at the most opportune moments. Like it's a game similar to Dark Souls that I really enjoy because you get drawn in by the difficulty, and then once you start to feel comfortable, there is essentially an inflection point where the game becomes actively difficult again, and it's ideally when you least expect it. So, That's it. I want to hear Cookie now.
So I've been playing more Monster Hunter. Honestly, that's about it. My outfit is now all pink, so Howard is now complete and getting the high ranked gear. Neil asked me earlier today when he first got here, is like, have I found that like beautiful armor build that I was actually like looking for? I initially told you no. But I guess yes, because I spent about a good day of just grinding certain monsters just to build a specific outfit for myself. And all yesterday, pretty much, and after I got home from work on Friday, besides watching Black Panther and partying, I've been kind of just like finding the prettiest weapons just so I can build them. So right now, my favorite weapon is a hammer that's pretty much just a large flower. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
As for me, I take it?
Yeah, that's about all I've been doing. I guess I played a little more Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Have you warmed up to that game?
it's better than when I played the beta. But I'm also now playing it on just like the arcade mode. So it's like on the easiest difficulty. So the AI is really stupid, which just means now I feel like the...
like the best soldier ever.
Like the badass I should be.
Or and that you're fighting a bunch of like...
toddlers.
If they're drug smuggling toddlers, then yes, maybe they should go.
I think there's a VR game like that. Doesn't drug matter. Smuggling toddlers.
Oh, man.
But no, I've been playing... I played a little bit more of that. The AI is still like really good. Like your teammates, your squad mates, like they're actually still really competent. And I find myself still leaning on them. I don't think I'm going to get very far in the story. I definitely am 100% sure I'm not going to beat this game because I can't tell where the story missions are.
So
it's not a very good map after like dealing with games that have like open world games that have good maps. I find Ubisoft maps not very good.
Funny, considering how many open world games they've made.
Now that I've seen a good open world map, I know what it should look like now. Now it's like, man, your layout is cluttered and dumb. Thanks for showing me everything everywhere, guys. Just empty the map. Be like, hey, this is the place that you want to go to. Call it good. Just Breath of the Wild, that bitch. And I'll be happy.
I don't really have much to talk about the games I've been playing. So I'm basically finishing up some games I've already talked about. Trillion, Night in the Woods. I also have been playing more Breath of the Wild. And it's been like a nice game that I can just kind of lay in bed and play. And like... the way I play the Switch in bed at times can be kind of ridiculous because I'll just have the console propped up like on a blanket or pillow on top of me, and then I'll just have my arms like at the side as if I was sleeping, just with the Joy-Con separately.
Oh, okay.
Super comfortable. Yeah, so that's all I've been playing. I think it might be time to talk about news.
Wait, before we talk about... wait, are we talking about games we want to play later?
Later on, yeah.
Okay.
That we're potentially going to play.
Because I do have a question for you, Neil.
Sure. What's up?
You mentioned back in the day that the moment-to-moment of Sea of Thieves doesn't look that interesting to you.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't remember.
Because like every time I mention Sea of Thieves, you're like, you know what? Or maybe Scott said the moment-to-moment of Sea of Thieves didn't look very interesting.
I actually haven't been paying attention to Sea of Thieves, so...
makes sense.
Probably not me.
But this was, like, back before it even came out, and... well, back before it was in beta. Have you been watching any kind of, like,
Nope, it's Xbox and Windows Store, so that's two strikes in a two-strike league, apparently. And best of threes, it's two losses. There we go.
There you go. So I've actually been like watching some video footage of the beta that's out, or alpha, or whatever it is. And I was like, you know, I could see where he would think that the moment to moment was kind of boring, especially like with the early footage that they were showing. It was a lot of not much of doing anything. But it turns out like the world's really small-ish and are like packed with things. Because it's usually like, oh, you think this person needs to sail for like 5 minutes this way. He gets just like the videos I've been watching, they've been like getting distracted by like shiny things.
See, I don't think it would be me because I've talked about how I've really liked, I mean, specifically sailing. I've really liked the mindlessness of sailing in games like Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, and Suikoden 4. Yes, 4. And
that's a part 4 is here.
Yeah, and they all have heavy sailing mechanics. And Breath of the Wild, for instance, is a good game where it's like there's not a lot between two points on the map, but at the same time, there's also a lot
between two points.
Yeah, it's like it's not a quest, but I'm gonna go check out why there is a random dude off like on a beach, and then it turns out he's like an assassin from the Yiga clan, that sort of thing, you know.
Or like boulder in the middle of a tree. That's what? My favorite for the Koroks. Just like, how'd this rock get here? And rocks can't climb trees.
But yeah, no, I think my biggest issue with that game was maybe just that it's Windows Store and Xbox.
It's not even giving it a chance, man.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel like it's that crazy of an opinion, because I know people that don't like Steam to the point where they won't install it on their computer.
How they
GOG, GOG. That's how they play games at that point. Or like just, you know, developers that offered DRM free versions that don't have to be coupled to Steam. But so like I don't think it's that crazy of me dislike the Windows Store that much, because no, it is like a shitty platform.
Could be iTunes, which I promptly deleted, and because I realized I've got an iPad, so I actually just checked our podcasts on the iPad after you left.
And we didn't have enough reviews, am I right?
Yeah.
So, no ratings are available yet, I think was what I saw too.
So I gave us a 5-star and called it a test. Either way, sorry, news and such.
Yeah. So, I wanted to ask you guys before we started recording, but do either of you care about System Shock?
What is System Shock?
That's a no there. Scott?
What is System Shock?
Okay, wow. I mean, yeah. It's an old game that's worth taking a look at, and that's all I'll say. There was a System Shock remaster Kickstarter a couple years ago, and it passed with flying colors, obviously, because System Shock is interesting and a good game, and that project is on hiatus, so add it to the Kickstarter failure list. And better news, Hidetaka Suehiro, also known as Swery, has announced his next project, and that's called The Missing. I'm botching my English today. So this is going to be published and supported by Arc System, who, of course, we know and love from Dragon Ball FighterZ, and basically every other 2D anime fighter out there.
Guilty Gear Xrd.
Swery is the guy behind Deadly Premonition and Dark Dreams Don't Die. And of course, the idea of the detective that has to masturbate in order to solve crimes.
I like lost focus for a second, and then I think you just said that to maybe gain focus. What?
Yeah, he had a pitch a while ago that he talked about in an interview where he wanted to make a game about a detective that had to essentially, like, who was able to solve crimes through like some ethereal power or like supernatural power, and she gained that power by masturbating. And obviously,
and then that,
like,
turned into the game where you pet cats to learn about crimes. Is that the same thing?
Yes, I think that was like a weird connection to the game that had a Fig pitch, which Fig is like Kickstarter, except you can actually invest in the game's success. But that's called The Good Life, and that's apparently still in production. It's going to have a new Kickstarter in March. But yeah, I'm super interested in anything this guy does. And this is actually the first project that is solely being developed by White Owl. So, like, if Deadly Premonition and Dark Dreams Don't Die are two games where he didn't necessarily have creative control, this is apparently one where he at least supposedly has. We actually don't know how much Arxis is going to be involved. Masturbating detective. Cat petting detective.
Well, same thing.
Isn't the deal in The Good Life that the entire town turns into cats at night or something like that?
I don't know what The Good Life is.
I think
you're right. It is. The whole town turns into cats at night. That is, in fact, The Good Life.
I think it's almost like Studio Ghibli-ish in terms of that sort of concept. Ignore the whole thing about the detective needing to pet a cat, so to speak, to solve crimes. But yeah,
I'd watch a detective pet a cat. to solve a crime if she was hot enough.
To pet cats.
Yeah. Anyway.
So before we talk about this next topic, I just want to say that, like, I don't, like, it is never our intention to make light of violent crimes, and especially those involving schools. But Kentucky's governor, I didn't even save his name because I'm that much of a shithead, is blaming violent video games for the most recent school shooting. This has been like a topic of discussion since 1997 when Jack Thompson, I think it was, the infamous lawyer that has since been disbarred, was trying to, like, you know, press on this whole like legal lawsuit or lawsuit towards Nintendo over violent games. Nintendo, of all companies, by the way. But I thought this maybe is a good time to actually talk about what your guys' opinions are on violent video games and if they really do, in fact, influence our youth, or not just our youth, but like people in general, at being more violent.
No.
You don't think so at all?
No, I've got a, I like the thought process better of violent video games don't push people towards violence in real life. I like the idea better that people with violent tendencies have a better chance of picking up violent video games.
Yeah, I can see that.
Rather than like, oh yeah, this person became violent because he saw a fatality in Mortal Kombat. Like, nah. Or this person's been driving over hookers for days in Grand Theft Auto. I love myself a Grand Theft Auto. Matter of fact, 9,000% of the games I play are violent video games.
I want to see a study that goes into congressmen and politicians and whether or not they've played Grand Theft Auto. You know, because they're the most experienced in society over killing hookers. I think maybe we need to look for that connection.
Oh my god.
But yeah, so
that was the best joke of the day by far.
But yeah, so but seriously, yeah, no, I don't really think that violent video games cause violence in the world.
And I'm definitely not trying to look for stats or anything like that. Like, we don't need to be scientific about it. I'm just curious what your takes are.
My take is, if you're going to be a violent person, you're going to be a violent person.
Yeah. Like, yeah, serial killers have existed since violent video games have been a thing.
And yes. Before, I mean, serial killers were cast as violent video games.
I'm like, yes, I guess you're right.
I do kind of wonder, though, like, trying to play devil's advocate, but, like, there are a lot of countries out there that have censorships in place over, like, how gruesome and violent games can get.
Australia for the win.
And Japan, for that matter, too.
New Zealand, I think, as well. Maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Do they just censor Game of Thrones? Fuck. Lord of the Rings? Because it's like, we get it. We don't need to be reminded that Lord of the Rings was shot here, guys. Get it out of here now. But yeah, Resident Evil 7 had like quite a few differences from the American and Japanese versions. Basically just to pass censorship laws in Japan.
Isn't our media known for being just on the whole more centered towards violence as the, like, I guess, primary shock factor versus, say, like, sexual content, things like that? Like, it seems like Americans have a better appetite for violence in their media than
nipples.
Other countries as well. Yeah, the nipples especially. Just get those out of here.
Yeah, man.
I was so upset when Super Mario Odyssey came out. And we found out that Mario has nipples.
And then we questioned where his belly button is. Like, what?
He's just wearing his shorts high up. Like, that's totally fine. I have to say that I'm in the same camp as Cookie on this, that you may find, instead of violent video games generating violent people, that violent video games are a product and something that people who desire what they provide, which may be, depiction of like violent acts, it may be satisfying someone's penchant already for like violent media and other things. And to play devil's advocate a little bit for you, Neil, or at least to try and be balanced between the two points, I think there's also the argument that certain violent media is a potential feedback loop for people who are into these things. You know, if you already have a person with violent tendencies that picks up very violent video games and likes to express themselves through them that way, I don't know. I'm not super into particularly violent games in general. But I certainly have played them, I think, to a relative frequency of other gamers in my kind of age group and cohort. But that may be another way to kind of reinforce those behaviors or normalize them to the person who's playing them. Like if you have violent ideation and you can act it out in a virtual space, maybe that's not the best for you mentally. But at the same time, the argument should be, it should be clarified that many, many people, lots and lots of video game consumers play violent video games and do not have any sort of interaction with violent behavior in their day-to-day personal lives.
Part of me wonders if really the media we have now, there would be extreme examples to this argument, I guess, but maybe we shouldn't be so worried about what media, and when I say media, I mean novels or books, magazines, TV shows, movies, video games, everything really has, and more about what is becoming readily accessible in terms of like the internet and what you can find on the internet at this point. Like, I don't want this to be like I'm not arguing for the stance of like internet censorship, but I think it's maybe more alarming when you can have a 14-year-old or any age group, not specifically that base, look up on Reddit and find videos of people dying, like real death, you know? And that probably, like, if you want to argue that the consumption of a first-person shooter makes someone violent, I think you have to concede that watching videos of people dying in real life is probably way worse than that.
Logan Paul for the win!
Well, that was a corpse. I mean, but yes, no, you're absolutely right. But he's also done some even more fucked up, well, not even more, but some additional fucked up shit as of late. Like, I think he was torturing like some rodents or something on his channel, last I heard.
Wait, he hasn't been kicked yet?
Well, he just had his revenue, he just had advertising banned from his channel entirely, or it's something to the extent where like he's not getting paid for advertising on his channel anymore. And I think that's probably the best thing YouTube could have done, because I don't think you can just kick this guy off your channel or your website, because I think if you do that, that empowers him in some way. Like, he can't play the victim. And if he does, he's an idiot. Like, I hopefully everyone would see through that.
Yeah, to add a little more context to the Logan Paul, the most recent Logan Paul scandal, he was in a video where he's tasing dead rats and he's quote unquote performing CPR on fish that he's pulled from the water. So,
whatever happened to the good old days when you could just turn on the YouTubes and watch a girl stare at you?
Or a hamster eat a tiny burrito.
Oh, that sounds adorable. It's still there, but it's like, it kind of goes to the point that for whatever reason, our society seems to have like a weird taste for cruel things. And like, it's kind of troubling. I don't know. It sucks.
Yeah.
Welcome to Political Talk, the Fancy Ramen Podcast.
Donald Trump this hour is going to be attending a conference for small hand therapists.
The Dow was down 17.5 points.
Bitcoin is down. Bitcoin is still on track to be worth $1 million in 2020. But many are selling, and selling quickly. Scott, are you shooting the moon? Are you shooting for the moon? Are you? I don't know my memes enough here.
No, that's all right. Shooting the moon is an expression, but that's right, Neil. I'm investing every single bit of financial liquidity that I have right now into Bitcoin. I also hear that it might be time to jump on other bandwagons, such as Dogecoin and I can't name a third cryptocurrency off the top.
Oh,
of my
God,
head,
it's Ether. Ripple. Ripple.
Okay, Ripple. Yes.
Ripple's what everyone's going for. People call in for Ripple all the time.
Really? You can buy Ripple at a...
No.
Okay.
No, you cannot. No. You can barely buy Bitcoin. You can buy Bitcoin futures.
So, yes, Neil, I've invested my entire life savings into Bitcoin. And now, as a fifth of a Bitcoin owner, I am preparing for my future inheritance of millions of dollars when I cash it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have comments, questions, or concerns, you can write into podcast@vancyramen.com. That's podcast@vancyramen.com.
So we're not talking about what we're looking forward to anymore.
I was going
to
do it afterwards.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a nice closing segment, I feel like.
Makes
sense. So, what are you looking forward to this upcoming week, Neil? Or is it more, what are you looking forward to in gaming?
It's a little bit of both. So I figure we're going to start... If there is something you guys know you're going to talk about down the road, and it doesn't necessarily have to be next week, but something that, you know, you maybe want to draw interest to or draw attention to, rather, this is a point where we can talk about things that are coming up or things that have just been released or things you might be playing for the next week. I know one game I'll definitely be talking about, if not next week, in the weeks to come, is The Silver Case. And while I've been talking a lot about random Japanese developers, this particular game is the first or the debut of Suda51, who's known for things like Killer 7, No More Heroes, and The Killer is Dead. A bunch of games that are like hyper-stylized and oftentimes sexualized. But this game is quite different from that. It's a mystery game from what I've read and what I've seen so far. And I think it might be... right up my alley with how much I've been enjoying mystery and thriller type games lately. I'm not necessarily as keen on this one, but from the director or from the developers of Gods Will Be Watching, they released last month a game called The Red Strings Club, which the description off of Steam is specifically or exactly... The Red Strings Club is a cyberpunk narrative experience about fate and happiness, featuring the extensive use of pottery, bartending, and impersonating people on the phone to take down a corporate conspiracy.
I want this.
Yeah, that's kind of like, what the hell is this? It's $15. I was kind of debating whether or not I should wait until it goes on sale, but maybe we could play it. I don't know, if you want to record that.
Yeah.
Pottery.
It definitely has the beautiful pixel art that Gods Will Be Watching also had. Actually, it's even better looking than Gods Will Be Watching. And it's got that same kind of neon Hotline Miami vibe to it as well. And it's a visual aesthetic. So it's a very pretty looking game. And the mechanics look like they're pretty different from anything else I've played. Might be up your alley, Neil. It looks weird.
So what concerns me is that I have such a high expectation for bartending simulators at this point, thanks to Valhalla, which if you're into anime narrative, that game is for anyone out there, I think. But Gods Will Be Watching, it was like just such a cool experience for me, and I'm don't want to rehash anything I've already said about this game because I feel like I've talked about it in the past. But yeah, it's enough for me to draw interest to the game. I am maybe more pulled in by that weird description. Like, how are you going to fit pottery into a narrative game? I don't know. And then last but not least on my list is a game called Night Shift, which was one that is designed to help doctors reduce diagnostic errors. So it's currently in closed beta, but I've been seeing this surface on a bunch of video gaming news sites, particularly because it seems to fulfill some sort of narrative or story direction that would that would interest players that are not necessarily doctors into playing. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. And when that releases, I'll probably buy it. Seems interesting. Anything you're looking forward to, Scott or Cookie?
Far Cry 5 is a month away. I might, because Ubisoft always seems to have pretty good discounts or sales, even for their relatively newly released games. I might wait on that. But the other game I was also looking forward to in March is, I'll have to make a determination on whether I get into Ni No Kuni 2 or not. I feel like I've got a better tolerance for playing kind of JRPGs now. After Persona got me into the whole... It's a very different type of JRPG, I should say. But,
says the person that still cannot get through Final Fantasy VI.
Final Fantasy III, Neil.
Onion Knights. I don't mean to go all corrective on your ass, but man, you can't be talking about Magitek armor and Onion Knights
you
at the
tried.
Same time.
You tried.
No.
Yeah, those are the two things that I'm keeping on my radar. Otherwise, I don't know what I'm going to pick up next just yet. There's still a lot of monster hunting to be done in the world.
Lots of monster hunting. You should definitely still grab that PlayStation Plus.
I know. It's a daily struggle.
And I am actually... I just downloaded Rime. It was one of the PlayStation Plus games of the month. So I'm going to give that a look-see.
I've heard it's charming.
I heard I might play more than 5 minutes of it. We'll find out. That's for next time, though.
What is the other PS4 title that's free this month?
Knack.
I've only heard amazing things about Knack.
We beat it already.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah, we beat it since it was like one of the first PlayStation 4 games to come out, and it had couch co-op.
That's right. I do remember this conversation now.
And me and Lizzie laughed every step of the way because her character was like doing most of the work because I was just being lazy while we played. And then she just mysteriously disappeared for all the cutscenes, so I'd take all the glory.
Are you excited about Knack 2?
No.
Okay.
We'll probably get it and play it and beat it. Because actually, no, we might not. Because we're not hurting for like games to play together now that we've got two separate PlayStation 4s.
Well, and you also have, in terms of quote-unquote couch co-op, you'll have that game...
Brothers? No.
That was their old one. A Way Out? Is that it?
Yeah, that's coming out pretty soon. Maybe we'll have you heavy record us doing that.
Oh, that'd be nice if I like don't actually have to play and I could just record your antics and hopefully get like some moments of... like marital problems because you guys are playing poorly. Like Lizzie, you just need to unlock the door, Lizzie.
No, we have perfected the amount of like couch co-op we can do, and like we know our boundaries now. Ever since Schizoid.
Schizoid?
Yeah, it's a game on the Xbox 360. Think of it as a twin stick shooter game, but one stick controls a blue orb, one stick controls an orange orb, and they've got to like collect and interweave and in and out of each other. Or you can play it co-op, where one person's the orange orb, one person's the blue orb.
Schizoid.
Yeah, Schizoid. What did I say? Schizoid? Yeah. Either way, yeah, that game was intense. Then we also played Eloy Miloy, I think was what it was called.
My Elo is way low.
Pretty much. And if you haven't heard of Milo Elo, maybe? Maybe. Nope, not that. I'm going to find it. I'm going to find this dang game. It's a puzzle game where you're bending the world around you.
Elo Milo.
Thank you. Also a very frustrating game, Couch Co-op. It's quite charming and beautiful.
And Neil, if you want to see conflict, just watch Sierra and I try and play Portal.
See, me and Lizzie didn't have that much trouble with Portal. I will say I did kind of shut down and give up at the end of the last level of Overcooked.
Oh, really? That was not as hard as I thought it would have been when we played it.
Well, after we got like the rhythm down of that stupid level and the stupid fires, it just got really frustrating because like we were keeping the fire extinguisher in like a specific place. Mm-hmm. It would get really frustrating when that specific place was on my side of the like two-part building and Lizzie's kitchen was on fire.
Wait, how does her kitchen start on fire? So I'm assuming Lizzie was on the side that the monster is not on, correct? And you're on the monster side. I think the only times we had fires were when the monster was impatient and shot fire at us.
Yeah, we also had fires at like random spots because like at one point...
Like you let something cook too long?
Yeah, like at one point it was like, okay, we both need to be over here. Crap, there's something cooking. Let me go back. And I definitely spawned on the wrong side. Either way.
Anyways, this is going on maybe a little too long today.
Cookie.
Thanks for listening. This was Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
Cookie.
Scott.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Omake!